This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender community. This is Queer Voices.
And on this evening's show, we have a number of topics to talk about, including the Progressive Women's Network. And we'll talk about the upcoming collaboration with the Comets Luncheon, and on April 15th, the golf tournament scheduled for April 29th. Also, we'll be talking about the upcoming At the Alley, the Act Out series, with one of their cast members of the Miser. Then we're going to be talking about this year's Unity Banquet, which is coming up shortly, and we have an election tomorrow, if you don't know about that. There's a runoff election for both statewide, for lieutenant governor, and for U.S. Senator, among a few other races. That's all coming up, plus This Way Out, community comment, and other interesting events that are going on in this community. You're listening to Queer Voices.
Was Namalee Brennett with her title cut from her album Chrysanthemum. This is Queer Voices.
Hi, this is Deborah Bell and
Greg Chapman.
And we're going to be talking to two lovely women who are with the Progressive Women's Network, fairly new organization here in Houston. It's Donna Shands and Lynn Roberts, and they have a couple events coming up this month that they're going to talk to us about. So, first of all, what is Progressive Women's Network? She says you. No, you know you. Okay.
Okay. Progressive Women's Network is a brand new nonprofit 501c3 organization that is all about providing a network of resources that will help women, their families, and their communities.
Mm-hmm. And what shapes does that take? In what ways do they do that?
Well, we basically, when we determine there's a need in the community, we will provide the resources that enable the dream to become a reality, per se. We'll work with different organizations to make sure that everything that we can do to provide that resource is made available to the women.
Uh-huh. And about how many people are currently involved in the organization?
Wow, that's a good question. We currently have about seven or eight members. Active members, but we are always seeking volunteers. There's never enough hands to get the job done.
Mm-hmm. So it is a membership organization where people can pay a membership fee and join?
Yes, it is. There is an application process, and that information is available on our website.
Okay. Well, you might as well go ahead and give the website information.
Oh, yes, definitely. Feel free to visit us anytime at www.houstonpwn.org.
Okay, and we'll repeat that a little bit later. Do you have any questions, Greg? You have that look on your face.
No. I was just trying to make sure that she was talking close enough to the mic.
Okay. Yeah, we're on limited mics tonight. Well, I know that there was a New Year's Eve event.
Yes.
How did that go?
It was awesome. It was so much fun. We already have people asking about our next one.
I see. And that one was held in a club. Do you think you'll expand it for next time?
Definitely. We actually held it at a small Japanese restaurant.
Oh.
You know, with it being our first event, we didn't want to overextend. But the response was so huge. It was tremendous. We definitely have to look at a bigger venue for next year.
Oh, that's very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
So, coming up this Saturday is a luncheon. Tell me about the luncheon.
Well, it is our very first in our leadership series. The theme of this one is It's a Woman's World, Leadership in the Third Millennium. And we are so excited to have the very first president and CEO of the Houston Comets, Ms. Andrea Boucher-Young. She's going to be our keynote speaker.
Mm-hmm. And what other things are going to go on besides a luncheon?
Well, it's an excellent networking opportunity. We have several vendors who will be situated throughout the hall. You'll get to meet with people who do web design. We have a couple of authors, that type of thing. We have one of our speakers is an author, and she will help you, if you're interested in writing a book, avoid some of the pitfalls that she encountered while she was on the road to being published.
Oh, well, that's interesting. That's something you don't get every day.
Right.
And you also are going to have another very special guest from the Comets organization?
We do, Ms. Monica Lamb. She is the CEO of the Monica Lamb Foundation, which is all about health and wellness. She's an awesome person, and I know she's a dynamic speaker.
Mm-hmm. She's very nice. And,
yes, she
and,
is.
And very tall.
Yes.
Of course, we always liked her when the Comets first started up because she was a hometown girl. So,
right.
It's wonderful that the Comets is being partners with this group because I know a lot of the women on the team are concerned about things in the community, and they almost all of them have a foundation or a pet charity.
Exactly.
And so this just expands on all the good work that is getting done. Now,
you mentioned that this was going to be part of a leadership series.
Yes, it is. We're looking at doing this one at least twice a year, and we will continue to grow. It's an awesome networking opportunity because we have business leaders from all areas of business coming. They've already signed on to attend. And this time we're having only about five or six different vendors, you know, showcasing their product or their service. And at the next one, of course, we plan to grow.
Mm-hmm. Well, it all really does sound very exciting. Now, if people want to come to the luncheon, do they go to the website to find out the information about how to do that?
Yes, they certainly can. They can visit our website, which is www.houstonpwn.org. You can actually purchase your tickets via PayPal there, or, you know, get all the information that you need.
Well, that's great.
What's the typical profile of your member right now? Are they mostly professionals or
it's very diverse. They're
very diverse.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Very. Most of our members are professional at this point, but our programs are not strictly targeting professional women. We have a lot of things that we do work on in the professional community, but we are all about empowering women in all aspects of their lives.
I think one thing that's really interesting about this group is, one, that it was started by women of color.
Yes.
And yet, it was opened up to be for all women from all walks of life. It's lesbians, it's non-lesbians, it's women that are married with children, women that are not married,
exactly.
Just every kind of group, and all are welcome to be involved. And it's also a bit different than some other organizations in the nature of its philanthropy, doing things that are of service or to help other groups in the community.
Right.
Although we do have a lot of that in the GLBT community, a lot of the groups either are for a specific purpose, such as the Sisters or LHI, or they're not a service organization, such
right.
as the National Organization for Women. It has a different
right.
focus. So that's different and special. And the other thing besides the, you decided you didn't have enough to do in April, right?
No, we never have enough to do. You know, we're just twiddling our thumbs.
So you also decided you were going to do a golf tournament.
Right.
Now, Lynn, I understand
yes.
that you're the co-chair or the chair of the golf tournament events.
Yes, I am.
And I don't even know what is involved in a golf tournament, so.
Well, we're learning too.
And luau. Wow, well, that I can get into.
And martini bar.
All right.
Let's just say we have it on April the 29th, Saturday. We have got the privilege of getting the Cypresswood Golf Course, which is a fabulous golf course. And we're doing 18 holes for Beau. Now, Beau is Beau's Place.
Mm-hmm.
Are you guys familiar with Beau's Place?
I'm not.
I'm not familiar.
Okay, Beau's Place is an organization that provides grief counseling for children who have lost parents or siblings. So 100% of the profits will go to Beau's Place.
And how did it come about for that group to be selected as the beneficiary?
We wanted something that was, you know, children. You know, they're our future. We're by progression of women and the children, so it was an excellent opportunity to get for them.
And we also look for organizations that are not well represented or, you know, that don't get a ton of grant money. They don't have a huge following. We try to find the smaller organizations and give them a helping hand.
Excellent.
That's really good.
And how does a golf tournament work? People pay in order to play, and that money goes into the coffers in order to...
Yes, this one is we're having sponsorships. You can have teams of four,
yeah.
individuals, or if you're not a player at all, we still have what we call a new golfer package. We have things like putting contests, golf lessons, and what makes our golf tournament really unique is that we're having a martini and Mai Tai bar on hole 10.
Uh-huh. Maybe if I had martinis, I could play golf. I don't know. I can do the luau, I'll tell you that.
So
that sounds good. That's about my game.
I'm guessing the scores will really go up on the second half.
Exactly. Or down.
Yeah, down, however you look at it. Yeah.
Depends.
Yeah.
Now, there's something. If you can do a hole-in-one,
mm-hmm.
and this the contest is open to both men and women, by the
way,
you can win a 2006 Honda Pilot.
Brand
wow.
new.
It's almost worth it just to try it.
Right.
Because what the heck? What are you going to lose, you know?
Right. Russell and Smith Ford took really good care of us.
That is really exciting. And then there's some other prizes and some fun activities throughout the whole day. And once again, people go to that famous website.
Yes.
www.houstonpwn.org.
That's Houston PWN as in Progressive Women's Network. HoustonPWN.org. And you can also call 832-969-2082. And we're talking to Donna Shawns and Lynn Roberts of the group Progressive Women's Network, who have a luncheon coming up this Saturday, the 15th, and then the golf tournament on the 29th. Is there anything you want to make sure our listeners know about that we haven't asked you about?
One thing, for the luncheon, proceeds do go to A Caring Closet, which is a really nice organization that helps young ladies prepare for their proms, underprivileged young ladies.
Oh, yes, I've heard about that. Young women that might not be able to afford a new dress,
exactly.
Get something that's been loved, used and loved, and
or new.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes, and it also helps them with their hair and makeup, the whole
company. Oh, excellent. What fun.
And also, we're still seeking sponsors and players for our fabulous golf tournament, so please, we're waiting for you.
Well, we'll have you on again to talk about your future activities, but thank you for being with us tonight on Queer Voices.
Thank you.
Stories about attacks on GLBT people around the world are sadly routine. This week alone, a mob at the University of West Indies campus in Jamaica chased down and hurled rocks at a man perceived to be gay. Police believe only their intervention saved his life. A senior news producer for the U.S. CBS TV network and a colleague were beaten this week with a wheel wrench or metal pipe on the Caribbean island of San Martin by four men and two women who reportedly called themselves gay bashers. And the men most responsible for last year's brutal beating of two gay men in Santa Fe, New Mexico, got what amounted to a preliminary slap on the wrist this week from a state district judge. As Jim Williams of KUNM-FM reports, while New Mexico passed a hate crime statute in 2003, some of the young men involved in the attack may not see any prison time at all.
In February 2005, 21-year-old James Maestas was pounded to within minutes of death after he and a friend, Joshua Stockham, were followed to their motel by six young Santa Fe men. Some of the six talked about beating up Maestas and Stockham because they're gay. The defendants, Jonathan Valdez, Paul Montoya, Isaiah Medina, Gabriel Maturin, Joseph Cano, and David Trinidad, all between 17 and 21 years old, chose to take part in what District Judge Michael Vigil agreed was a hate crime. Trinidad, Maturin, and Medina pummeled Maestas and left him choking on his own blood in a Santa Fe La Quinta inn. Valdez, Montoya, and Cano did nothing to stop it. They all pleaded guilty.
Nobody can prepare you for seeing somebody that you love so dearly in the condition that we found my son that early morning.
State District Court Judge Michael V. Hill listened to 4 hours of testimony in the sentencing hearing, some of the most compelling from James Maestas' mother, Jerry, who described seeing her son in a coma. She turned to the six suspects seated with their lawyers around a rectangular table next to her.
That evening, you all decided to get into that vehicle and chase these young men down. There were those of you who chose to beat him. There were those of you who chose to stand by and do nothing, not even make a phone call. You left my son bleeding, unconscious, left him for dead. Those were the choices you made that evening. And with choices come consequences.
The six young men glanced at her occasionally, but showed little emotion. James Maestas stood next to his mother as she spoke, his hand on her back, his eyes focused straight ahead, then took his turn.
Watching friends and family go through the hardships and seeing the trauma that I went through, it was hard to go through. I will never, ever forget this. Having someone hate your lifestyle, that they would physically beat you, it's hard to accept. Your Honor, I wish more than anything else that no one else would have to go through the suffer that I went through.
Cheryl Stockham's son, Joshua, was also beaten in the attack. She shook as she spoke to the six young men seated beside her.
One thing I do want you to hear, and make sure you all hear this, gay people do not choose to be gay. You may have children in the future, and you may have a child that turns out to be gay. What will your reaction be at that time? Even more so, what will the reaction be of people like you who hate gays? What will their reaction be towards your children? I want you to keep that in mind, all of you, because they did not choose to be gay. Who would choose to have a life where people hate you?
Your Honor, I urge you to impose stiff consequences for these defendants. This was a hate crime, not only against gays, but against humanity of all kind.
The Hill also heard from family members of the defendants who pleaded for him not to impose jail sentences. Some of them said alcohol and the so-called pack mentality of boys were partially to blame. Some said the attack wasn't characteristic of the young men. And the defendants spoke as well, each offering apologies to Maestas and Stockham. David Trinidad was 17 at the time of the attack and already on probation for raping a 4-year-old child. He'll now be held in juvenile custody until he's 21.
I'm ashamed that I beat up. We got two guys that were weaker than us, and we beat on them. Just hope that everything will go good for me, hoping that I can get to that treatment center. You know, I want to get the help I need.
Behill saying, quote, "I'm not ready to throw you away," sentenced Trinidad to 5 years probation after his juvenile custody ends. Valdez, Montoya, and Cano each got a 3-year probation and were directed to complete a program on tolerance and 500 hours of community service, some of that sharing what they've learned with other young people. Before sentencing, Isaiah Medina's neighbor, Carla C. DeBaca, spoke on his behalf.
We're not saying that he should get away scot-free because that would not be right, but I also don't feel that he should go to prison. If he serves 6 years in prison, 7 years in prison, he's going to end up having to learn how to be someone he's not, and I don't know how he will make it through that.
Along with Trinidad, Maturin and Medina were most involved in the beating and were charged with aggravated battery causing great bodily harm. But though Vigil said what they did troubled him the most, the judge would say only that Maturin and Medina should see the inside of a penitentiary as a look at how things could be. He gave them 60 days to do that and a diagnostic evaluation at the correctional facility in Los Lunas. They'll then be back in Vigil's courtroom for a final sentencing. The state had sought full penalties of 7.5 years in prison for the three, including the 1-year hate crime enhancement. In sentencing the six, Judge Michael Vigil said the homophobic attacks show Santa Fe isn't the community it's thought to be, adding that its reputation as a tolerant place is, in his words, a myth.
This was the first case prosecuted in New Mexico under the hate crime statute.
Ann Badway is co-counsel for the Attorney General's office, which helped prosecute the case. She points to the fact that each defendant will now have on his record a guilty plea to a hate crime, and that the hate crime enhancer gave Judge Vigil the chance to emphasize the prejudice behind the crime. She says Vigil would have to answer questions about his choices on prison time, and adds that she feels the prosecution team did as much as it could in getting probation sentences for Valdez and Montoya.
In general, when a plea offer is structured, what has to be taken into consideration is what evidence does the state have to secure a conviction beyond a reasonable doubt. The state, my co-counsel Sherry Weinstein and I, believe that they were appropriate charges given the evidence that we thought we could prove at trial.
Badway will be back before Judge Michael Vigil when Maturin and Medina return for final sentencing in 60 days. For This Way Out, I'm Jim Williams in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
This is Queer Voices.
Hello, this is Greg Chapman, and I have with me Philip Mayard and Paige Wilson, and of course also Deborah Bell, and we're here to talk about Act Out at the Alley Theater, and they've got a production that's coming up called The Miser.
Philip, welcome back to Queer Voices. He comes on a regular basis to tell us what's new in the series of Act Out, and that included, of course, the wonderful Culture Clash group, which is probably one of my all-time favorite productions. Explain what Act Out is.
Act Out is the Alley's gay and lesbian theater group. We meet the first Thursday of the run of each Hubbard Stage production. And this Thursday, we're going to be meeting up for a pre-show party, celebrating our new production of Molière's classic farce, The Miser.
Tell me a little bit about The Miser.
Well, The Miser is actually a co-production that we're working on with Theatre de la Jeune Lune of Minneapolis. Jeune Lune is a French company that started in France in the 70s, and they're now based in Minneapolis. They're really famous for very unconventional, outlandish sort of productions. Their nickname is the Loonies, so that should tell you a little bit about what to expect. It's a mixed cast of Alley Theater people, regulars, Charles Crone and David Rainey, who are two of our resident company actors, are in it, but as well as a whole slew of people coming in from Jeune Lune. And Paige can tell you a lot more about what to expect in terms of the design. It's very, very different from anything Alley audiences have ever seen.
Okay. Paige is the milliner and crafts master. Now, do you design the costumes?
No. I basically work on anything that's an accessory to them. If it is a hat or a mask or jewelry, dyeing, distressing shoes, that comes from my studio.
Uh-huh. And do y'all make everything, or do you sometimes have to go out and shop for it?
We do. We build, shop. We do borrows, things like that.
Uh-huh. And so what kind of costumes are involved for this production of The Miser?
The costumes were started and were designed, and most of them originally built when the production was conceived, where I believe they started.
They started it in Minneapolis.
In
that
Minneapolis.
Was the first production of this particular show, but each place that it's been seen since is definitely, like in our case, it's alleyized, as we call it.
Yes, we have to find new costumes for, like, say, our actors that have joined the ensemble and also do repairs and things like that on the current costumes.
Mm-hmm. Now, are these very colorful? Are they modern day? Are they from the time period? You know, is it the Molière updated, or is it?
Well, it's sort of Louis the 14th meets 80s punk. It's very.
I think I have a closet full of it.
It's a chance we've gotten to use duct tape on costumes. We've never had the opportunity to do that before. And it has.
I did that when Bush said that we could be protected by using duct tape. I put a lot of duct tape all over.
Yeah. But things are very distressed because he is a miser and he withholds all of his money.
Uh-huh.
And what the designer has done is created a very wonderful world that the audience member can immerse themselves into. Sort of the way Cirque du Soleil takes you and pulls you into their world.
Mm-hmm.
So. Is this a modern setting or is it period?
It's period.
It's
the
period?
Architecture and everything is, it's a very rundown sort of French chateau.
So that's one of those French words. I'm still trying to get around leaving France and going to Minneapolis, but
yeah, it's kind of an unusual fit. But when you see these guys and you see the show, you'll kind of understand. It's they're definitely a very unique group of people. It's been an interesting process meeting all these people who work very differently than we do, and it's been challenging and fun and crazy.
Mm-hmm. And now this play is a farce. Tell me a little bit about the nature of the farce.
Well, it's definitely very funny, but it's a ridiculous sort of funny, and if it's not. It's definitely not heavy, the parts I've seen at least. Now, we haven't opened yet, so we're still in previews right now, and so things are changing every time you see it. But it's funny. It's a very funny show. Basically, he's the miser. He's willing to sell his daughter off, basically, in order to stay rich. So
sounds kind of American, actually.
Right, exactly. Well, there are a lot of political, especially now, there's a lot of political undertones that you can read into it. They don't come right out and say it, but I think that when audiences see it, I mean, you can't help but see some parallels in the storyline to what's going on now.
Mm-hmm. And tell me exactly what happens with the act out. People get to come to a reception before the play?
Right. We do this every show, and the series has really grown in popularity the last couple of shows. We've gotten where we have a big crowd. We're almost outgrowing our space. We do a pre-party about 5:30. It's up on the 14th floor of the Alley Production Center on the balcony overlooking downtown. It's a gorgeous view. This particular event, we're going to be celebrating all things French along with the theme of the show. We're going to have French pastries and champagne. We got complimentary appetizers, wine and beer from Budweiser. And our DJ, Mike Bell, is going to be spinning French House, which I've been listening to. Some of it is very cool. So we got a really different kind of music. You get to meet the cast. A lot of the cast members will come up and work the room and talk to everybody, which is kind of fun to see them out of costume, especially when you see what they look like afterwards in this particular one, because they're virtually unrecognizable. And then everyone goes down to see the show about 7:30.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a fun party. It's a really great night. Most of the staff comes now because it's the best party in the world, I'd like to say, at least.
I've been to a few, and they're very nice, very fun, and, of course, always excellent productions at the Alley. The reception is free with a ticket to the play.
Exactly.
And there are special discounts for people who are part of the Act Out series.
Absolutely.
Now, at the beginning of the season, you can buy the season.
You can.
But there is a 20% discount.
And how do you get that discount?
Very simple. You go to the website, www.alleytheater.org. And anywhere it says enter a promotional code, put in ACT OUT, ACTOUT, all one word, and that's going to get you a 20% discount on tickets to the to that performance. And all you got to do is come by the theater about 5:30 and pick up your tickets and come on up to the party.
Mm-hmm. And for everything going on at the Alley, you can check out the website www.alleytheater.org, and that's theater with an R-E, not theater. And www.alleytheater.org. And I want to talk some more about costumes and accessories, because I'm kind of into that sort of thing. I saw The Pillow Man, which was an amazing production. And you said that you got to be part of creating some of the more macabre aspects of that show. What did that involve?
Well, in essence, for Elizabeth Bunch, who played the tortured boy, the little Jesus girl, and the green girl, we started months in advance and did body casting of her, and then I sculpted what the corpse boy was look like and made a latex mask and bodysuit for her for that moment in
mm-hmm.
the show.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's quite time-consuming, but it was very fun, and we brought in Heather Warnock, who's our wig master, and Amy, she works at the opera, who's done a lot of prosthetics and things like that, and the three of us attacked poor Elizabeth.
And she did several of these characters within the course of the play, so did you have to be there and be part of the makeup and everything, or was your job done at that point?
We stay with everything throughout the tech process for changes and notes, and if things aren't fitting quite right, we make adjustments. But once the show opens, our wardrobe crew sort of takes over, because by then we're moving on to the next show.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever gone and watched a play and then seen something that you just thought was like a terrible faux pas with the costuming, or you thought, oh, I shouldn't have done that way, or... No?
Not at the Alley, of course.
Well, no.
It's always perfect.
What am I thinking?
There's always, little tweakings that we do when we, can we, change the color of this slightly, and then I'll dye something, and, work with the designer very closely and getting their vision as close to what they vision as possible.
And Paige, you've been with the Alley for 2 seasons now?
Yes.
And so I guess you work on the Christmas Carol.
Yes.
Yeah. And there probably are some interesting costuming things done with that, because of it being such a period piece, and especially when they do it with the ghost.
Yeah. Oh, the ghosts were a huge project for me this year, with the masks and their headwear, also their implements of death, making sure that things are in the right place and that the dancers can dance with them. How do they fit with the costumes? And then just making sure that things stay on.
Mm-hmm. That's always important. We don't want any Janet Jackson costume malfunction things going on.
Mm-hmm.
That production always makes me think of it. It's a cross between Halloween and Christmas. It's a little different than what a lot of people see. But it's done, the way they weave the story is done with interesting touches. There's the thing, that's not the standard of what we have grown up with when you just read that or say a traditional production. It's not a traditional production of the Christmas Carol.
I would think you would have to be just extremely creative all the time. And I'm just curious, what is your favorite creative moment when you really had to stretch to make something happen? I mean, is there just something that stands out for you, a favorite costume or just a favorite play that you had to work on that really stretched you?
Well, I have to say The Pillow Man was an absolutely amazing challenge, but so joyful the entire way through. It was wonderful working with the actors so closely and with Greg Boyd directing and the designer just to make sure that everything, you know, we're encasing an actor in latex, making sure that, you know, she can really work with all of this. It was a wonderful journey, not just with the physical process of building things, but also through the play. It's a wonderful play to explore.
Mm. Now, how does one get into doing the work that you do? What kind of background do you have to have?
I originally started in dance, and with our small dance department, we had to do our own costumes and masks and things like that, so I started there, and then when I went to graduate school, I didn't even realize that there was a separate section for crafts, and then I started finding out more about how costume shops work, and they noticed that I had a knack for it and sort of locked me in the craft room and didn't let me out.
So I'm curious, what's the next event? What's coming up next?
Well, actually, currently, we have a show down on our new house stage called Orson's Shadow, which I think would be very popular with gay and lesbian audiences as well. It's about the backstage drama that happened during a production that involved Orson Welles, Vivian Leigh, and Sir Laurence Olivier, or I should say the production that never was.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some great scene stealing, scenery chewing moments, and that I think gay lesbian audiences would really enjoy it, even though we're not doing an act out. We only do our act out events for the Hubbard stage mm-hmm. production, but Orson's Shadow is going on our new house stage right
so
now.
So if you're a drama queen, you're probably going to like Orson's Shadow.
I really think
what you're saying, Philip?
But I think both of our shows right now that we've got, Miser upstairs and Orson's Shadow downstairs, both of them are definitely appeal to a gay sensibility, you know, for different reasons, clearly. Mm-hmm. And then our final production of the season opens next month. We're doing Agatha Christie's Witness for the Prosecution.
Ooh, that's going to be excellent.
That's going to be a big one.
Yeah.
And, it's a big cast and a big, huge production. If a lot of people who have only come to the Alley for summer chills should think about coming to see this, because it's basically a production too big for a summer production.
Uh-huh.
We held off and did that as a full-scale Hubbard stage production to finish up this season.
Now, the season, I don't know, was it the first play in the season this year, the Be My Baby?
Mm-hmm.
And that was with Hal Holbrook and Dixie
mm-hmm.
Carter.
Yep.
And then was it Marisa Tomei was supposed to come, but something happened. I don't know. She had a baby or she...
Something happened.
She got a movie mm-hmm. deal. I don't know. But mm-hmm. we didn't get to have her. She was going to be in Born Yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So do you know what's going to be coming up next year?
When will
the season start?
Well, the season will start in late September. We have some. We haven't announced officially. We do have some plays under consideration. We're looking at a new production of Much Ado About Nothing. We're going to do... We didn't do Shakespeare this year, so we're looking at that. We're looking at a very likely a new adaptation of Treasure Island as a big...
Now that's going to be fun costuming.
That's going to be a big one. Next season is the Alley's 60th anniversary, so we're going to have a lot of special events going on involved with that. It's also, might add, is also the 50th anniversary of Betty Fitzpatrick, her involvement with Alley. She's been with the Alley for 50 years.
Wow.
And there's going to be some special events celebrating her and
wonderful talent. Anyone
who's ever been to the theater in Houston knows Betty, and she's fabulous. And so there's going to be a lot of things going on with that. But those are two big productions that are under consideration. Look for that announcement probably in the next 2 to 3 weeks.
Well, I want to thank so much Paige Wilson, who does fabulous work with the millinery and craftsmaster of costumes and things for the productions at the Alley, and Philip Mayard, who your website master.
That's technically my job.
Yeah, but he does a lot of other stuff,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, Act Out turns out to be a bigger part of my job than the website. Usually.
Yeah. But I think it's one of those a job that you love, and it is a wonderful thing to go to get to meet other people that are also interested in theater and like to have a good time. Nobody in this community is like that, I'm sure. And then, of course, they always feed us really good, yummy stuff. These French pastries, I'm looking forward to. And again, you can go to the alleytheater.org online or call 713-228-8421. Thanks for being with us on Queer Voices.
In state after state, the legislature wants to regulate human nature. In short, from sea to shining sea, they'd like to tell you who to be. They can pass all the statutes that they please. Acorns won't grow into maple trees. Besides, those differences they hate are the strength that makes this country great. Only fools would write those laws. They simply can't succeed because you can't take the color out of Colorado. You can't take the Mary out of Maryland. As John Philip Sousa said, I can't march if I can't hear the boys in the band. You can't take the sissy out of Mississippi. He's there and he's going to stay. And so QED, it's as plain as ABC. You need us to make the USA. You can't kick our asses out of Massachusetts or subtract the 10% from Tennessee. Utah could never be the beehive state if the hairdressers went absentee. You can't run the homos out of Oklahoma.
No!
It's their home and they won't go away. In the land of the free, diversity's the key. You need us to make the USA. Who will never be passé in old El Paso? Who will always know what's new in New Orleans?
Chicago with no chic would be boring in a week. And you can't have New York City without Queens.
Right! You cannot replace those Staten Island fairies. And who'll always keep Santa Fe? Yes, we're proud to state we help make this country great. You need us to make the USA.
Virgin out of West Virginia. Take the orgy out of Georgia, if you must. You can drive the evil out of Wisconsin and leave Illinois' ills in the dust. You can try to take the KY from Kentucky, though I doubt that you'll get very far. But you'll never take the collar out of Colorado.
Don't you realize who we are? With a friendly teller at your bank, with a teacher at your Sunday school, with a guy who fixed your water tank, with a cute new lifeguard at the pool, nice young man who bought your car, with a lady singing on the radio. We're your favorite daytime TV star. All kinds of people you already know.
We're doctors, lawyers, movers, shakers, friends and neighbors, policymakers. And remember this about us, America. Fort Wayne. We're part of America, the beautiful. Remember, fruits and play. We're all marching to a master orchestration. So please let all the instruments play. Just to leave no doubt, one more time we'll spell it out. You need us to make the USA. You need us to make the
That, ladies and gentlemen, was the patriotic finale from When Pigs Fly. And before that, Sonia and Disappear Fear and their song No Bomb Is Smart from DF05 Live. This is Queer Voices.
We Well, you know, we sort of get into this habit of doing the things, same things over and over again, and you all changed that by dropping the BBC News. So we don't...
Don't glare at me when you say that.
It was sort of a mutiny here at Career Voices.
It was a matter of we felt like that none of the other 7 o'clock shows played the BBC, and that it was a poor lead-in to our program. But
KPFT is going to fix that.
Yes,
right.
They are.
They're going to move us back. We're going to be starting next week. We go from 8 to 10 p.m., which is not necessarily something we wanted, but they're going to be sliding another show in at 7 p.m.
Yeah, interchange with Larry Payne, and we'll see how it goes.
Right.
And if we don't like it, then we'll raise a fuss.
Us raise a fuss?
Yeah, us.
Well, but what we didn't do is we didn't introduce ourselves.
Well, now we can.
Okay. Well, I'm Jack Belinsky.
I'm Jennifer Renee.
Greg Chapman.
And Deborah Bell.
And I'm Glenn Holt.
And not that, you know, we overly introduce ourselves, but sometimes we forget to do it completely during a show.
That's been known to happen.
So that's like the biggest news that's happening right now is remember that just like sort of the time change, well, we're changing time also.
I think I'm going to be 2 hours behind now instead of just one. But starting Monday, April 17th, next Monday, Interchange will be on at 7, and then Queer Voices will be on starting at 8, going till 10 p.m.
Well, at least we're in prime time still.
Well, I guess.
Well, you know, prime time is television. Radio prime time is during the time that people are in their cars driving to and from work, which is usually from like about 7 to 9 a.m. and from about 4 to 6 p.m. Of course, in Houston, that pretty much happens all the time, as in a lot of metropolitan areas. There's a couple things I want to talk about. One is the Bunnies Party is this weekend, along with the Jungle Party.
Okay, the Bunnies Party is also known as...
The Bunnies on the Bayou.
And is this the 27th?
It is. Can you believe that? The Bunnies Party...
Guys putting on bunny ears and bunny tails and hopping around.
Exactly. Well, you can bring your Easter basket and all that type of stuff. What the Bunny Party is, it's a big party, mostly men, but not totally men, and it happens down on Fish Plaza, which is the area right around the Wortham, which is where the opera is performed. And there is a charge to get into it, and it is basically a fundraiser for a lot of community events. Same thing with the Jungle Party. The Jungle Party is a party that happens, well, there's parties all weekend long, but the main event happens on Saturday night, just the Saturday before Easter. And that has been at Verizon's, but I think they moved it this year. And we actually tried to contact some people to get them on, but somehow the scheduling didn't quite work out, which is unfortunate because those are two very big fundraisers in the community.
I'm supposed to be there on behalf of the Lazarus House. I'm going to be at the door the third shift, the late afternoon time slot. So,
what do you wear to the Jungle Party?
I was going to ask what I have to wear at the Bunnies.
Yeah, I'm kind of interested in what you wear to a Benny party.
Yeah.
Well, as long as possible.
We dress up like Playboy bunnies.
Oh.
It's basically,
ears and a tail?
It's
look good that way, Jennifer.
It's basically
thank you.
A cocktail party.
Uh-huh.
You know, it starts at 2.
And it goes
like I said, seven. A bunny's in a tail.
Or you can dress in tails. Most people do. Is it pretty casual?
Yes, it's very casual. Shorts, jeans, that type of thing. And because it's outside and the weather looks nice. The past 2 years, the weather wasn't all that good. But this year, it looks like the weather is going to be fine again.
That's an official forecast.
Well, that was the one I saw on the internet.
Yeah, that's the one you're hoping for.
Yes.
Well, another thing that happens outdoors is the AIDS Walk, and this year the AIDS Walk had over 10,000 people participate and raised over $700,000.
Wonderful.
Of that money was distributed along with helping with the AIDS Foundation itself, several community organizations, and congratulations to all the folks that worked on making that happen. And it's a really important thing in our community. So I guess next March you'll be, you know, get ready for next March.
There was an interesting article in The Voice talking about GLBT tourism in Houston. And it was interesting, although they didn't interview anybody for the Convention and Visitors Bureau, which I thought probably Nancy should have done, was why is other cities reaching out to the GLBT audience and travel, and Houston is not? Channel 2 did a story a couple weeks ago, and basically the answer from the city was, well, we don't reach out to any particular group, which is not true. They do reach out to conventions.
Yeah, businesses and everything
businesses,
else.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the largest event, of course, that happens in Houston is the Pride Parade every year, which I am part of, so I have a conflict of interest in talking about this. But the reality is that, you know, Houston could be bringing some more money into the coffers of the city by reaching out to GLBT audience.
Yeah,
just as Dallas did in the Convention Bureau in Dallas. There, it's on their website, and of course the website here doesn't have anything. You'd think we're invisible.
Well, I guess we are in that way. Mm-hmm. But especially since we have such a fabulous nighttime parade, it's something a little bit different than what you get elsewhere in the country. And there's, you know, I think Houston has a lot to offer if people are exposed to it, to know what all is here. And so I thought you were going to talk about the other article.
Which
was
other
the
article?
One that I wrote.
The one that you wrote?
About Gretchen Phillips.
Oh, well, but you talked about that last week.
Yeah. But we did have a wonderful concert with Gretchen. She is just awesome. And J.D. was there. He has some new pictures on his website for the August 2005 edition of Queer Music Heritage, which features an interview with Gretchen. And then he added the photos from last Friday night. Our next concert will be on April 28th with Martine Locke, who is from Australia, and JD will be interviewing her the Monday prior. So join us for that.
And another event of interest that's coming up next Monday is Molly Ivins is coming to
Molly Houston. Ivins?
Ivins, excuse me. She's coming to Houston. It's sponsored by the, I believe, the Progressive Forum. And she's going to be, I believe, at the Alley. And I really don't have any more information than that, but it's a rare opportunity. She does have cancer, so I don't know when, you know, we don't know when she'll be back in Houston again.
Yeah, she's fabulous. Jack and I are both big fans of Molly Ivins, and I think this is her Molly Ivins, You Can't Say That. And, of course,
or
she
who
does.
Who let the dogs in?
She says whatever's on her mind, and it's usually right along the lines of stuff I'm thinking, so, of course, I think she's brilliant. And
well, yes, actually, you know, her commentaries on the, you know, what I term the worst president ever.
Yes.
That's in office right now, and he's doing damage for generations to come of so many things, from the environment to our rights to everything else.
Well, here's something a little different. Have y'all heard about the character on The Sopranos, Vito? Well, apparently Vito is pink mafia.
Yes, I read that.
And so that it's a new little twist in the storyline there, where there's one of the mafia guys is gay, and apparently he gets found out by some other of the guys, and so he's trying to ingratiate himself to Tony Soprano's family so that I guess he'll have some protection or something.
How many episodes is he going to last?
I don't know. That was the question, I think. Really interesting. You know, speaking of tourism, the Houston International Festival is coming up, last two weekends of April, and our wonderful friend Christy Claxton is going to be presenting two stages featuring gay and lesbian artists.
Really?
Yes. I don't know that all of them are, but most of them are. And it's going to be great with the music, and it'll be really fun. And Christy's going to be interviewed next week by JD to talk more about that. But in the Outsmart, they talk about a little bit of the irony that here we're having this piece from the porch and this record that's coming out to go against people that have suffered from violence. And the country that is being recognized this year with the International Festival is Jamaica.
Yes.
And as you may have heard on This Way Out, that was the scene recently of some horrendous hate crimes. There's also a trend in a lot of the music coming out of Jamaica of being very homophobic and hate-filled. So it's an irony that here we're going to have this wonderful stage with queer artists and working against violence, and it be recognized.
Are they out of, I mean, I'm looking at their website right now, and it's got all the sponsors for the stages, but it doesn't say exactly what they are.
Well, it should have the piece from the porch stage and give details about the artist. Also, if you check out Outsmart Magazine's website, it'll have links to the International Festival site and more about Christy Claxton and the artists that are going to be performing at iFest.
Okay. Well, that sounds great. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. We have plenty to do.
Well, of course, you're listening to KPFT Houston at 90.1 here and 89.5 in Galveston. And I think we'll be back in just a second.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Valensky, Joan Devlin, J.D. Doyle, and Glenn Holt.
Hey! Sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy.
Man shall lie with man if they want to. Woman shall lie with woman if they want to. And at the very least, beast shall lie with beast if they want to. That's my Leviticus. Women shall take the lead if they want to. Men may spill their seed if they want to. And those who wish to rate don't need to procreate if they don't want to. That's my Leviticus. Is due here for our bodies, for we have nothing to conceive. Who decided that our bodies are sinful to reveal? Walking hand in hand shall be the custom. Peace throughout the land shall be the rule. And those who wish to love shall follow the above if they want to. That's my Leviticus.
The song My Leviticus from the album Get Used to It. This is Queer Voices.
This is Jennifer Winnay, and we've got our guest here. It's Josephine Titsworth. She is co-chair of the Houston Transgender Unity Committee. And Greg's with us also. Sorry, don't want to leave you out.
It's okay. I'm here.
I'm sure that you'd speak up anyway. Josephine, talk to us. The banquet's coming up this weekend.
This Saturday at 6 o'clock, the cash bar opens up. And we're ready to entertain the world. It's open to the entire gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, questioning, intersex, and allies. And it's a family affair. You bring your family out too.
Very good. I understand something's going to be happening on Friday before the actual banquet.
Well, every year, the night before the banquet, we have a wine and cheese, and that's kind of a gathering where people come together. There's no charge for it, and we just kind of network and work on our friendships.
And when does that start?
That starts about 6:30 Friday night.
And that's at the hotel. Where is it all located?
Oh, West Chase Hilton Hotel, 99, 9999 Westheimer. Just over close to Beltway 8 in Westheimer. And it's West Chase Hilton.
Is it possible for people to still get tickets for the event?
Oh, yes, you can still get tickets. If you want to actually get a ticket in your hand right away, I suggest you go over to Jules at Taft in Fairview, and she has tickets available. You can get tickets. Now, tickets are $50 in advance, and there's $60 at the door.
Well, then you need to get them between now and Friday or Saturday.
Between now and Saturday.
Is that at the door, or if they buy it at Jules during the day on Saturday? Does that work?
You can buy it during the day on Saturday.
Okay.
Jules.
Just trying to check to try to save $10.
So, what kind of food is going to be at the banquet?
I'm trying to remember now. Maybe Jennifer can help me out. Do you remember what we found?
All I remember is prime rib.
Prime. That's what it was. Prime rib.
For those of us who are meat eaters.
Yes. I'm carnivorous. But we have vegetarian meals as well.
I was going to say, anyone who needs vegetarian meal is available. All they need to do is tell when they register or come there?
Well, when you come in with your ticket, it'll be somebody. It's usually going to be Rose sitting outside the door. And then she'll give you a little colored sticker that you put on your plate. And you can get either a vegetarian or a vegan meal.
Oh, great. Well, is there entertainment? What else is going on at the banquet?
Well, we're going to start the banquet off with just kind of a few announcements. But every year we give away awards. And we've got five people we're going to give awards to this year. It's a secret. Come to the banquet, you'll find out who they are. And then
Can you tell us what the awards themselves? I guess that would kind of give away who might be up for them.
Well, not necessarily. We have five awards. One is a People's Choice Award. That's our popularity award. And another one is the Apogee Award. Then we have the D. McKellar Award in honor of D. McKellar, who used to be a very active person in the transgender community who passed away. So we have an award in her honor. And then we have the Champion Award, and we have the Lifetime Achievement Award.
Was that five? I didn't count.
I think that was five.
Yeah.
How about that?
That's very good. You got them all. There is no test at the end of the day except you out in the audience, so you'll know. Entertainment.
Entertainment. Don Gill is bringing his group out to help raise funds for the Dr. Peggy Rudd Transgender Scholarship Fund. And he's got some great singers that are going to come out and entertain us with their singing and give us a chance to help fund some scholarships for some transgendered students.
Isn't this the first year they'll be awarding scholarships?
It's so exciting. It's really exciting. We're actually going to give away two scholarships this year. And so we're really excited about that. This is the first time.
Now, is anyone eligible for these scholarships, or is it limited to the transgender community?
It's for transgender people who are out of the closet and who do the application process. We have an independent committee that reviews all applications, and then they recommend to the board who should get the award.
Now, isn't it that this scholarship fund was set up because most other scholarship funds don't accept transgendered individuals?
There's very few transgender scholarships out there. IFGE, that's the International Foundation on Gender Expression, they have scholarships for transgenders. But other than that, I don't know of another transgender scholarship. There might be. I'm not aware of it.
So there's just
not very
two?
Much.
Oh, my
not
God.
Not very much at all.
Let's see. After Warrior, we've got the awards, we've got the food, we've got entertainment. What else is going on?
Well, we have a DJ. We have a dance after all the foods, the awards, and the scholarships. It's opened up for a dance, and it's just a great time. We just have a lot of fun.
How long has this banquet been going on?
This is our 14th annual banquet.
Wow.
We have it every year.
So it sounds like the transgender community is just becoming more and more organized and better represented. I would imagine there's a lot of other stuff going on right now, just even besides the banquet.
Sure. Some of the stuff that we do through the Houston Transgender Unity Committee is we're highly involved in educating the public. We go to colleges. We do in-services for businesses and agencies and organizations as well. And so there's a lot of those things that are going on, too.
Because I was going to say that a lot of people don't know what the Houston Transgender Unity Committee does. And what's so that's part of it. What else is involved in the committee? What else do they do?
So we're the best-kept secret in town.
Well, this is your chance to no longer
out.
Be us. Let the secret out.
The Houston Transgender Unity Committee sponsors the transgender float in the Pride Parade every year. We also help support the Empower Conference, and we also this past year started taking the responsibility for the Remembering Our Dead ceremonies, which we held at the Holocaust Museum.
Oh, that was the Day of Remembrance.
Oh, yeah, Day of Remembrance. Yeah. And where we recognize all the transgender people who have been murdered throughout the country.
I understand that was very successful this year, more so than in the past.
We had the largest crowd ever for this ceremony. There was over 80 people at this ceremony, and it was really good. HRC was there, and the Holocaust Museum just opened their doors to us.
So were transgendered people targeted during the Holocaust as a specific group?
Yes, they were. They were treated just like the gays were, and they were persecuted and executed, and just like the gays were.
Yeah, I don't know if there's really a lot of awareness that occurred.
Well, we're the best kept secret in town.
Right. So that's your job, though, is to bring awareness.
Bring awareness to the public about our issues. We're human beings like everybody else. Been working with the University of Houston Clear Lake to get transgender put in a non-discrimination statement out there.
They don't have non-discrimination at University of Houston?
They don't have protections for transgenders. Now, they have protections for sexual orientation, but not for gender identity. And we're having great successes at the University of Houston Clear Lake.
Now, is that system-wide or just Clear Lake?
Right now, it's just Clear Lake. Wednesday night, I've been invited by the University of Houston Central Senate to come talk to them about the issue of transgender inclusion, and we'll see what happens there.
How far is it till it gets system-wide? Or once this is passed, is it just at Clear Lake?
Actually, the way it's going to work, Thursday, the University Council at University of Houston Clear Lake will consider the issue of inclusion. If they approve it, it immediately goes to the president's desk at University of Houston Clear Lake. Should the administration there decide to pass it on to the U of H System Board of Regents, then they will make a decision on this case, on this issue.
So as far as doing it system-wide?
As far as doing it system-wide.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's good. Are any other of the college systems around the city inclusive of transgenders, or is it just strictly you're out there, the lone voice in the wilderness?
No university, college, state, or private in the state of Texas has protections for transgender students, faculty, or staff. Should the University of Houston, Clear Lake, or the system, whichever, incorporate transgender protections, they will be the first in Texas.
That's great. That's great. Let's go back to the Unity Banquet. Give us the information again. We want to make sure everybody hears it.
All right.
Where is it going to be? When's it going to be? And we can get tickets. Go ahead.
At the West Chase Hilton Hotel, 9999 West Hammer, out by Beltway 8. It'll start at 6 o'clock when the cash bar opens. Don't miss the cash bar. And the tickets are $60 at the door.
Go ahead.
And then they're, but if you get them at Jules, they're $50.
And how would they acquire tickets at Jules? Is there a number or an address?
Jules has her store at the corner of Taft and Fairview. And I don't know Jules' phone number. I just know how to get there.
Now, can't you buy tickets online?
Yes.
Well, how do you do that? Do you go to do that?
You can go to our website, www.HoustonTransgenderUnity.org. And on our website, there's a link for tickets. Click on the link and you can purchase your tickets online.
Well, thank you very much for coming and being with us tonight and letting us know. We'll invite you back to hear more about your progress at University of Houston Clear Lake.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Way out, we began the story of early 20th century gay humanitarian and controversial Irish patriot Sir Roger Casement. The first part of the dramatized biography by producer Hugh Young and narrator Barry Empson described Casement's roots in both Irish Catholic and Protestant households and how family, friends, and associates portrayed him to be an exceptionally charming and adventurous young man. Hopping a ship to Africa, Casement would eventually work for the British Foreign Office, winning acclaim for exposing the brutality of King Leopold's rubber trading operation in what was then the Belgian Congo. And his story continues.
No signal answers from the shore, Sir Roger sadly said.
We present The Broken Heart of Ireland, The Life and Death of Sir Roger Casement. Part 2, The Devil's Paradise.
But I must still my duty, and at once I mean to land. So in a small boat pulled ashore on the lonely Banner Strand.
Last time, we told you how Roger Casement was instrumental in saving the Congolese from the tyranny of the rubber traders in Leopold II's so-called Congo Free State. In his spare time, he was picking up tricks in beats from Kinshasa to Madeira. He recorded them, their dimensions, for he was what we'd call today a shameless size queen, and other interesting details in his black-covered diaries. The Foreign Office then sent him to South America. In 1908, he sailed to Para, now known as Belém, a damp, unhealthy town on the mouth of the Amazon. But a year later, he was promoted to Consul General in Rio. It's there that the only external record that Casement might be homosexual was made. A father, told that his good-looking son was to have lunch with Casement, was overheard to say with a smile, "Be careful." Casement must not only have been stunningly discreet, he must have been stunningly lucky, because his diary for the same period has notes like,
"The young, thin, dark gentleman of Ickesby, eyed constantly and wanted, would have gone, but Gabriel waiting. In very deep thrusts. Lovely. Young, 18 and glorious. Biggest since Lisbon. Perfectly huge."
Many Irish patriots believe the diaries were forged.
"They tried to foul your memory as they burnt your corpse with lime. But God is not an Englishman, and truth will tell in time."
No gay man today would doubt for a moment that a gay man had written them, and they cover some 3 years, interleaved with all of Casement's other experiences. It would have taken years to forge them. He wrote poetry, much of it about love, the love object, unspecified.
"Love took me by the heart at birth, and wrought out from its common earth, with soul at his own skill aghast, a furnace my own breath should blast. Why this was done I cannot tell, the mystery is inscrutable. I only know I pay the cost, with heart and soul and honor lost. I only know 'tis death to give my love, yet loveless can I live? I only know I cannot die and leave this love God made, not I."
He returned to Belfast in May, after a chance encounter with John McGonagall.
"Awfully keen. X, 4 and 6p.
X being a private code, but the entry X in deep thrusts gives us some clue. And in Belfast the same day, he met an old love, Miller, and took him to an hotel.
"Turned in together. Not a word said till, wait, I'll untie it. And then, grand. First time after so many years, and so deep mutual longing. Huge. Told of many. Grand."
He also found time to go to Offenbach's Tales of Hoffmann in London. He found the Baccarole heavenly. But life for the rubber workers in the upper Amazon was hellish, and a newspaper called Truth headlined a story about it, The Devil's Paradise. The villains this time were landowner Julio Cesar Arana and one of his henchmen, Armando Normand, on a tributary of the Amazon called the Putumayo on the border between Brazil and Peru. This time, the Amazonian Indians were flogged, tortured, and shot if they failed to bring in the rubber. On one occasion, Normand is said to have lined three men up and shot them with one bullet. On another, he ordered a man killed by smashing his testicles. Casement described him as a loathsome monster, and in 1911, he reported back to the Foreign Office. His report was so strong that a mere threat to publish it was felt sufficient to force the Peruvian government to make reforms, though it didn't work out that way. And for his work, Casement was knighted. He accepted the honor, though he felt a traitor to Ireland, and it was to Ireland that he devoted more and more of his energy. So far, he'd involved himself in the promotion of the Gaelic language, but more and more in the Home Rule movement. Born of Catholics in Dublin, but raised by Protestants in Ulster, Casement was well placed to promote Irish independence in both the North and the South. There was an Irish party, but its view was a narrow one of power in Westminster. Instead, he followed the lead of a Dublin journalist, Arthur Griffith, who'd founded an Irish separatist party, whose name is still powerful in Ireland today, Sinn Féin. Sinn Féin means ourselves, often translated ourselves alone. The Unionist Party, Northern, Protestant, anti-Home Rule but still pro-Irish, was led by Englishmen. Enter our next villain, one of those Englishmen, F.E. Smith. And an added complication was Northern Irish support for the Kaiser's Germany, going back to German-born King William of Orange. Casement believed that the Home Rule Bill then being toyed with by Parliament was just an attempt to secure Ireland against the Germans, not a real attempt to grant self-government. A united and free Ireland became an obsession to him, and it was about this time, 1913, that people's opinions of Casement began to be a little less ecstatic. To one young nationalist, he gave an impression of instability and restlessness, and the wife of an English supporter thought him crazed. And next week, we'll tell you about Casement and Ireland.
So in a small boat pulled ashore on the lonely Bonner Strand.
This is Queer Voices.
Well, it may not seem like it, but actually it is, again, election time. Tomorrow.
Again?
Tomorrow we have runoffs. I guess there's some runoffs also in the Republican Party.
Yes, there are.
In certain areas. And statewide there is elections, runoffs for both the Lieutenant Governor and U.S. Senate seats, plus some other ones around the county. Maria Gonzalez is with us, and she is presently the president of the Houston GLBT Political Caucus, outgoing president.
Outgoing, correct. Jennifer takes over in May. Anyway, I'm here to talk about the primary tomorrow. 7 to 7, usual voting time. Please check the Houston Chronicle to see if your precinct is going to be there. Also, HoustonVotes.com on the website, track down precincts. If you're in District 146, that's currently Al Edwards District, all those precincts are going to be open as usual. We have endorsed Boris Miles in that district. Al Edwards, even though he's a Democrat, has been less than GLBT friendly. And so, and Boris Miles, we really liked him for the runoff. He's a good guy. We had originally endorsed Al Bennett in this primary. Al Bennett didn't make it. Al Bennett immediately endorsed Boris Miles as well. And we went back to Boris. He did really well. Al Bennett slightly beat him out a little bit. Boris Miles is a great candidate. We look forward to him winning tomorrow, we hope, in District 146. We've also endorsed in that state Representative District 146. We've also endorsed in U.S. Representative District 10, this is for Congress, Ted Ankrum. District 10 is that curious district that you know, goes from a little bit of Harris County all the way to Austin. And Ted Ankrum is, we hope, will be the Democratic candidate in that district against a fellow named McCall, I believe.
Who's the incumbent.
Who is the current incumbent, a Republican who is not GLBT friendly. Ted Ankrum is a solid fellow, really GLBT friendly. He spoke to our membership at this past month's meeting last week. Solid fellow, really knows his stuff, really an expert on veterans affairs, veterans issues, really important for our community. And finally, U.S. Senate Democratic primary runoff. We've endorsed Barbara Ann Radnofsky. Barbara, really a sharp lady. We had hoped to endorse her earlier, but she was planning to get our endorsement for the initial primary, but the schedules just wouldn't line up to get her, to allow her to screen with us. So we ended up endorsing her in the runoff, getting a chance to sit down and talk to her, even though it was a phone conference. It was a conference call.
She was on our show last week.
Yeah, and she was fantastic. As you all know, she's a good lady, a smart lady. She'll be a real challenge to Hutchinson in a way that the dead dancer would not, whose name is also on there. We're encouraging people to please, please go out and vote tomorrow. We're going to be calling and trying to get people to just come out and vote. Nobody seems to know that there's a runoff primary election tomorrow. There's an election tomorrow at all. Get the word out. Anybody who's listening to this, remind your coworkers, your friends. Shoot, call your neighbors and tell them to vote. And to vote for Barbara Ann Radnofsky, U.S. Senate. If you're in District 10, Ted Ankrum, U.S. Representative, Democratic candidate. And if you live in State District 146, please, we need Boris Miles in the state legislature. We cannot afford Al Edwards bringing forward some other salacious cheerleading legislation that people just make fun of.
All over the country.
It's just ridiculous. So we really need Boris Miles on there. I hope everybody will be voting.
Well, it should also be noted that when the Democrats fled the state to try to stop the redistricting, Al Edwards didn't go.
That's right. He was one of the few who stayed and kind of hurt us a little bit in that.
Well, as far as what is the GLBT Political Caucus doing to support the candidates?
Well,
and
it's a real challenge because, you know, it's a primary runoff and there's very little money right now. And, you know, I got a phone call at the caucus line just this past weekend asking, you're saying, I didn't get an endorsement card. Well, admittedly, we could only afford targeted mailings. So what we did is we targeted our mailings to those voters that we had ID that are on our voter registration, on our voter registration database, and those are people who support GLBT issues, support us as a community, are themselves GLBT. And, you know, that's a listing that's close to 30, 35,000. We just could not afford to send everybody an endorsement card. So we targeted State District 146 and U.S. Representative District 10. That was a mailing, heroic efforts on Jack's part to send out over 2,200 letters that included the endorsement on there. We wish we could send out a mailing to everyone. We just don't have the money. We will hopefully have the money this fall to send out an endorsement card to at least one time to everybody on our database. And if you're not on our database and you want to receive our endorsements, get our information, look us up on our website.
I was going to ask you, if you're out there and you're curious and or don't have the information, or where would I go to find the endorsements?
www.hglbtpc.org. That's the Houston GLBT Political Caucus. That's hglbtpc.org. One other item I want to mention, Jennifer, and that is our screening process. How do we do this? I could see the question all over your face.
I didn't know it was printed on my forehead.
Our endorsement process is one of the wonderful things about this organization, the caucus has always had a really solid endorsement process. We invite every candidate whose address and name and email and phone number we can get a hold of, including Republicans, Green Party, Libertarians, Democrats. We invite them to seek our endorsement within Harris County mostly. We then pretty much beg certain individuals to please seek our endorsement. Others, the minute they hear about us, want to get, contact us, want our endorsement. But we do our best to get through, get a hold of people who we know are going to be running, and we do our best to go through the people who have filed as candidates and invite them to seek our endorsement. It's then followed up with, they call back or they email back and say, yes, I do want your endorsement. And then we send them a questionnaire, and we set up an interview. It's a half-hour interview. And at that interview...
Now, that's what you call the screening itself? The interview is the screening.
Well,
okay.
It's both items. It's the questionnaire. They come in having filled out our questionnaire, and they screen with a panel of members, GLBT caucus members.
Is it just members of the caucus, or can anyone be part of the screening process?
We've been known to invite individuals to be part of the screening process, but we really ask people to be members of the caucus.
So if they want to be part of the screening process, they need to join the caucus?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's where we get our volunteers anyway. We get a list of... We go through our membership list and ask people to please come in and sit on the panel to volunteer, because it takes a while. Usually for the big elections, there's like a 2-3 week period where we just line the candidates up for a half hour interview. We set up different panels, and they come in with their questionnaires filled out if they haven't already sent it to us before, and then we have our own scripts, and our membership grills them. And I mean, it's a grilling. You can ask many a candidate.
Yeah, I've been part of them before. Yeah, I have fun with them.
Well, people take our endorsements seriously, and that's because we do a serious job. We ask serious questions. We have serious issues that have to be addressed. After the interviewing process is over, the scores are tallied up, and then at our next general membership meeting, at that time, we have our endorsement meeting. The scores are brought forward. The questionnaires are in a file. People are invited to ask, how did they answer the question on gay marriage or, gay adoption, things like that. And at that meeting, we have debate and discussion about candidates. They can get very contentious. Sometimes we're in a consensus mood, and they go rather smoothly. I'm trying to think of when was the last time it went smoothly. I can't remember.
Washington was running.
Probably. And this year, we're going to try to push our endorsements a little earlier. Historically, we're under a city council calendar, and that usually requires that we have our screening and interviews take place in June and July with our endorsement in August.
Well, let me understand then. Okay, this is the runoff for the primaries that we're having tomorrow.
Yeah.
Okay.
That we already did. Those screenings we did in January.
Okay, these are the elections, and everything's... you're talking about screenings for the general election
in November.
November
election.
Oh, okay.
That's right. And November, historically, is when everybody votes, and so our calendar and endorsement process is around, historically, the November elections. The primaries are their own situation. They require their own calendar. The November general election for this fall, because we're not locked into a city council race calendar, we're going to be able to do some slightly earlier endorsements. Our big priority is to address what's going on in district, in Martha Wong's district. So we're going to invite Martha Wong and Ellen Cohn to probably be the first two to seek our endorsement.
Does Martha Wong come? And
she's invited. No, she we'll see.
She hasn't shown. Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll see if she hopefully she will respond this time and we'll get a chance to sit down and talk with her.
So the screenings for the general election are going to start when?
We're hoping to get those started in late May, early June.
So if anybody that's not a member wants to be a member, they need to sort of...
They need to become a member now. Yeah.
If they wanted to do that, how would they do that?
Well, they can go to our website, hglbtpc.org, download a membership, or they can come on over to the community center, the GLBT Community Center, second floor, 3400 Montrose, Suite 206. We have our membership cards there. Come by, pick them up. Our endorsement meeting this year for the November election, the big endorsement meeting, is going to be in July, at our first Wednesday in July meeting, as opposed to August, which historically it is. We really want to get a jump on the campaign schedule. We really want our candidates to be able to get their brochures out that include us if they are endorsed. And so we're going to try to push calendar up a little bit. So we're asking people to become members ASAP.
Well, as we do need to make this announcement that KPFT, which is a 501c3 nonprofit organization, does not endorse in any elections. We are simply providing this interview as information and what the Houston GLBT Political Caucus is doing. The endorsements mentioned are by that organization, and that's how it works.
Which is why we ask everybody to become a member of the Houston GLBT Political Caucus, because KPFT does important work, but it can't endorse a candidate. It can introduce you to candidates, but it can't endorse a candidate. And that's what the caucus is for. So we encourage everybody to become.
For more information, go to hglbtpc.org. The election is tomorrow from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. You can check the Chronicle for the precincts that some of the precincts collapse. In other words, they'll have two precincts in one area at one place, especially in the places where there aren't too many races going on. So look at the Chronicle tomorrow, and if you didn't, you can vote. If you voted in the Republican primary, then you have to vote in the Republican runoff. If you vote in the Democratic primary, you have to vote in the Democratic runoff. Or if you didn't vote at all, you can vote in either one.
Yeah, that's correct. And so if you didn't vote at all, please vote in the primary, Democratic primary, and vote for Barbara Ann Ranofsky. If you're in District 10, Ted Ankrum. And if you're in District 146, we really need to get Boris Miles in.
And Maria Gonzalez is president, outgoing president of the Houston GLBT Political Caucus. You're listening to Queer Voices.
Thank you, Maria.
Thank you.
I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Lucia Chappell.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending April 8, 2006. Government officials in several countries have been discussing legal recognition of same-gender couples. Opening new offices in Dublin this week of Ireland's Gay and Lesbian Equality Network, Prime Minister Bertie Ahern pledged to pass civil partnership legislation for gay and lesbian couples similar to the laws that came into effect in the UK in December. Our sexual orientation is not an incidental attribute. It is an essential part of who and what we are, Ahern told the opening day audience. Sexual orientation cannot and must not be the basis of a second-class citizenship, he said.
But Ahern acknowledged that it might be more difficult to legalize same-gender unions in Ireland than it was in the United Kingdom, which includes neighboring Northern Ireland. Unlike the UK, the predominantly Roman Catholic Republic of Ireland's constitution has a clause requiring protection of the institution of marriage. Ahern said that a government-appointed group of experts would recommend several possible options in a report expected near the end of the year.
Also speaking out in support of same-gender couples is President Alvaro Uribe of Colombia, although in a somewhat limited way. During a meeting with college students in late March, Uribe was asked about his government's views on gay and lesbian couples' rights. According to a report in El Tiempo, he responded, "I will be completely sincere. First topic, marriage, no. Second topic, adoption, no. Inheritance rights, yes. Social Security, yes." Uribe's administration then introduced a measure in Parliament that would grant spousal rights to same-gender couples in the areas of inheritance, division of property, health care, and pensions. The legislation could face an uphill battle, however. A recent Gallup poll found that 77% of Colombians oppose legal recognition of same-gender unions.
Taiwan's Interior Minister Li Yiyang has announced that gays and lesbians should be able to seek protections under the island's domestic violence prevention law, the Taipei Times reported. Li said that gay and lesbian couples who live together should be included under the category family members, although the current law doesn't explicitly say that. The determination was made public as legislators reviewed the law in a Judiciary Committee meeting in late March. Legislator Kuo Lin Young said gays and lesbians have been derided, persecuted, and constrained in the past, but now they have begun to speak out and must now be equally protected by the law. Lawmaker Huang Su-ying noted that the concept of family traditionally referred to heterosexual couples and called the decision made at the review session a breakthrough for gay rights.
Canada's new Conservative Prime Minister Stephen Harper said this week that he'll keep his campaign promise to hold a free vote in Parliament on whether to reopen the issue of legal same-gender marriage. But government sources say that won't happen before the House of Commons breaks for summer vacation. Marriage equality advocates condemned the apparent foot-dragging. "We don't want this issue hanging over our heads," complained Lori Aaron of Canadians for Equal Marriage. "Parliament has better things to do than roll back the clock on equality," he said.
The Netherlands is marking the fifth anniversary of the modern world's first legal marriages for same-gender couples, which began a few minutes after midnight on April 1st, 2001.
We're in the city council chamber of the city of Amsterdam waiting for the four happy couples to come upstairs. And here comes Mayor Joop Cohen, Mayor of Amsterdam, who is officiating tonight, the former Minister of Justice who did so much to push this bill through both houses of Parliament. And here they come. Here comes Geert Kasteel and Dolph Paske, and followed by Helene Fausen and Annemarie Toos, Tom Janssen and Louis Rochmans, and finally Peter Pieterbrood Lemke and Frank Pieterbrood. And they're taking their seats, and Mayor Cohen is stepping up to the microphone. This is the first legal civil marriage between two men or two women, and that is unique in the world. The opening of civil marriage is a milestone in the history of lesbian and gay emancipation.
That was correspondent Mindy Ron reporting for This Way Out 5 years ago. About 2,400 same-gender couples married in the Netherlands during that first year. Those numbers have reportedly stabilized at around 1,200 each year since.
But Swaziland's Minister of Justice and Constitutional Affairs, Prince David Dlamini, has ruled out same-gender marriages in his country. The Constitution reflects the custom, culture, as well as the religious tendencies of our people, he said. In a nod to Namibia, Zimbabwe, Uganda, and some others on the continent, he added, Swaziland is not about to endorse human sexuality at a time when a number of African countries are making specific legal provisions banning such a practice.
Another newspaper publisher has been jailed in Cameroon for printing lists of public figures and celebrities alleged to be gay. Nouvelle Afrique publisher Biloa Ayisi was sent to prison for a year for trying to out a prominent doctor and the government minister for parliamentary affairs. Ayisi also was fined 4 million CFA francs, or about $7,300. He plans to appeal the defamation conviction. The editor of L'Anecdote was jailed for 4 months and fined the equivalent of about $1,800 in early March for publishing the same government minister's name on a long list of alleged homosexuals.
Brokeback Mountain continues to make news around the world. The new DVD release of the groundbreaking Oscar winner is selling briskly, but the film was banned this week from movie screens in the Bahamas. You have a group of people who are telling grown men and women what they can and cannot watch, Island Theater owner Philip Burrows told the Associated Press. I cannot understand denying people the right to make their own choices, he said. Theaters in the capital city of Nassau had already begun to advertise the movie when the government's Plays and Films Control Board announced its ban at the urging of the Bahamas Christian Council.
But global retail giant Walmart has been selling the newly released DVD of the film, despite vocal protests by some U.S. religious right groups. In a statement on its website, the Mississippi-based American Family Association urged concerned Christians to visit their local Walmart locations and share their displeasure over the chain's decision to promote and carry the pro-homosexual movie. But Walmart spokesperson Gail Lavielle told the Reuters news agency, "We're a retailer. We want to sell things our customers will buy." According to Universal Studios Home Entertainment, Brokeback Mountain sold more than 1.4 million DVD copies on its first day of release earlier this month.
And finally, citing policies against controversial issues or religious advertising, U.S. TV networks CBS, NBC, ABC, and Fox have each decided not to broadcast an ad for the United Church of Christ that promotes inclusivity. It shows an African-American single mother, a gay couple, an Arab-American, and others being ejected from their pews by a giant supernatural hand pressing a big red button. Text on the screen then reads, God doesn't reject people, neither do we. As an announcer says, the United Church of Christ, no matter who you are or where you are on life's journey, you're welcome here. This is the second time a UCC TV spot has been nixed by the major networks. The first, rejected in December 2004, depicted bouncers preventing lesbian gay couples, people from ethnic minorities, and others from entering a church with the same tagline. It was named the year's most outstanding electronic advertisement by GLAAD, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation. The new ejector ad is running this month on at least 17 broadcast and cable networks, including A&E, AMC, BET, CNN, CNN en Español, Headline News, the Hallmark and History Channels, TBS, TNT, E, Lifetime, CTV, Azteca America. And you'd think on Logo, the Viacom MTV network's owned U.S. cable channel specifically targeting GLBT viewers, right? Guess again. When asked for an official reason why the country's first full-time queer cable outlet won't show the spot, an MTV network spokesperson responded, "Our guidelines state we will not accept religious advertisements that may be deemed as disparaging to another religion." On the contrary, says Ron Buford, director of the UCC's Still Speaking initiative, he says the campaign was created by the 1.3 million member denomination to encourage church attendance and counter the alienation some people feel from organized religion. Ironically, Buford was honored in November by the Logo Network and Out Magazine as one of the top 100 most interesting, influential, and newsworthy LGBT individuals.
I guess the idea of gay TV doesn't really mean it's your community's network, Buford told United Church News. It's just something that's targeted at you to sell product.
That's News Wrap for the week ending April 8th, 2006. Written this week by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappelle.
And I'm Christopher Gall.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine. This week, Christopher Gall, Lucia Chappelle, Rex Walkner, Graham Underhill, Jim Williams, and Hugh Young and Barry Empson contributed program material. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out exclusively on planetout.com. There's also a link on our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to find out how you can help keep this program on the air. And choose from some unique This Way Out queer history, music, and culture CDs that you can own as our thanks. That's thiswayout.org. To sign up for our weekly emailed program information messages and or our monthly This Way Out updates, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappelle and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on KXCI Tucson, Arizona, CKDU Halifax, Nova Scotia, WHYS Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
Well, and before we slide our way out of here, we got to remind everybody that we're moving back an hour starting next week. We'll be on from 8 to 10 p.m. Central, if you're listening on the Internet, some other time zone. It's something they're putting a new show up on in the earlier time slot, the first hour. So
we're springing forward, in other words?
Again.
No, we're springing back.
We're Don't confuse back. Me.
You like you need help.
Well, is it that obvious?
Well, besides us moving, so is After Hours. They're moving back a day.
Yeah, they're moving to their original Saturday night, but I think the same time, 1 a.m., which is really early Sunday morning,
right,
to 4 a.m.
That was where I was first on the radio, on After Hours.
So Jimmy Carper and the After Hours crew, you can join them on the wee hours of Saturday night, late Saturday night,
well,
early Sunday morning, depending on how you look at it.
That starts next week, not this week, if we're not mistaken.
Well, we could be mistaken.
We could be mistaken.
I got the idea it was supposed to be this week.
Well, maybe you're right. We were hoping Jimmy would be on, but he didn't quite make it.
Yeah. So, and then also Matthew Momo's show, which follows us on Mondays, therefore is going to start at 10 p.m. So, in some ways, it's good in planning the show and waiting around other people's schedules. Sometimes because we deal with people that are in different time zones, it makes it a little more problematic. And it makes it problematic for those of us in the collective here that are fortunate enough to be employed.
Well, and also there's less
in
of
real
an audience.
Jobs.
There's less of an audience the later you are on in the day.
Well, I hope that that will change. I hope that our listeners will keep listening, and if they do miss the program, that they'll listen online at kpft.org. The shows are archived for 60 days, and sometimes I have to go back and listen and say, what did I say?
Well, and you not only can listen to it online, you can download it to listen to later, and then you can actually put it into your whatever pod that you have to listen at your leisure.
Queer Voices all day, all the time, 24/7.
That would be scary, wouldn't it?
Well, and we've got the parties coming up this weekend, which are big fundraisers, both the Jungle Party and the Bunny Party.
And the Transgender Unity Banquets. Yes. We're raising for the scholarship fund.
And this is also the week for the Queer Bingo at the 1415 Club upstairs. It's the third Saturday of... Is it the third Saturday already? Wow.
How did that happen?
How did that happen? That's right.
That was because the first fell on a... of Saturday.
Yes.
So this is actually the it is the third Saturday.
Right. Wow. And tomorrow there is a Pride meeting if you're interested. It's at if you're interested in volunteering, you can come by at 6:30 p.m. and the meeting starts at 7, and that's at the Metropolitan Multi-Service Center at 1475 West Gray. Also, for many of the people who vote in Montrose, that's where you would be voting tomorrow. I guess they're collapsing a lot of the districts where there's only a few races going on. What we understand that in District 146, Texas Rep, all of the local polling places will be open. But it is now on the website, harrisvotes.org. You have to do a little bit searching in there. You have to first say which primary, Democrat, Republican, and you put in your precinct number, and it will tell you where your voting place is. It will also be in the Chronicle tomorrow. And if you don't know what your precinct number is, you can also do a search on that site to find out what precinct number you're in.
And if you go in and you don't see the names of the caucus-endorsed candidates, it's because either they're not in the precinct where you're voting, the race doesn't apply there, or it may have been somebody that is a good candidate but was not didn't go through the endorsement process. So we just need to remind people of that, because there's a woman running for lieutenant governor in the Democratic primary, Maria Luisa Alvarado, and she's not a caucus endorsed candidate, but she's a good candidate, and she
one thing to remember is that the GLBT political caucus is different from the GLBT political caucus pact. And it's really the PAC that's doing the endorsing.
Right,
it's
the Political Action Committee.
It's the Political Action Committee. You get that straight so there's not getting confusion
out
there.
Well, don't say straight. We don't want to get anybody
straight. I'm sorry. it just slipped out.
Yeah. And our very own Jennifer Renee Poole will be the incoming president of the caucus, and starting with the May meeting.
May meeting, yes. So
congratulations on that.
I'm overwhelmed, but humbled, yes.
Yeah.
Well, it was really interesting last week when we were talking to David Elliott. Just a little while after, that's when the announcement was made that Tom DeLay is leaving office.
Oh.
And if you want to see Carol Wyatt's rant about Tom DeLay, go to socialnoteshouston.com and enjoy that. Those words of wisdom. Because
of course, he's also waiting to resign to make it more difficult for anybody but his hand-picked candidates who take that office over.
Oh, yeah, there's some finagling going on.
Yeah, he's still trying to control the vote and who gets to vote. If he had his way, it'd be separate but equal.
Well, and what do we have next week, Deborah?
Well, we have a whole bunch of good stuff. I think you have the list.
I have the list, yes.
Oh, good.
So what...
tell you that I have guaranteed I have Barney Frank's mobile number now, and he will be on next week. He will be on at 8:30 our time, now that we're in the new time slot. But he'll be here, and I'll be interviewing him at 8:30.
Let me give this to you to make sure, because I think you said one guest probably won't make it.
We're hoping that Greg Brown with the Pasadena Little Theater production of The Wisdom of Eve, which is the play that is all about Eve that most of us know the movie of, hopefully he'll be able to join us, but he may have to stay for rehearsal because of the time change. And then the wonderful Christy Claxton will talk about the Peach from the Porch Project, the Piece from the Porch stage that will be at the Houston International Festival with J.D. Doyle. And Joan also has an interview with a gospel singer, Melvina Harrison.
That's interesting. We certainly like to thank the guests that were on our show this week.
Absolutely. Josephine Titsworth and Maria Gonzalez with the GLBT Political Caucus.
Donna Shands and Lynn Roberts from the Progressive Women's Network. Philip Mayard and Paige Wilson from The Alley and their Act Out series with the production of The Miser this Thursday night, reception and the play. And thank you, as always, for being here and for listening to Queer Voices. Join
and supporting
us.
KPFT.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Tune
thank
in
you.
At 7 p.m. for Interchange with Larry Payne next week. And remember to join us in our new time slot of 8 o'clock.
Have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 7 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, and Jack Valensky, with remote correspondents Joan Devlin in Iowa and David Elliott in Washington, D.C. For more information about guests, events, and organizations mentioned in the show, visit queervoices.org. Some of the music you heard is listed or available on J.D. Doyle's website, queermusicheritage.org. Be sure to listen every Saturday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
Protests.
Walkouts.
A movement that many are calling Houston's biggest civil rights struggle in a generation.
Tough federal legislation targeting immigrants has sparked mass protests across the United States, and Houston has been no exception.
Join KPFT on Tuesday, April 11th, from 7 to 10 p.m., as we talk with the community and you about this important issue.
The show will feature recent coverage of the Houston actions, guests, and your calls.
This program will be hosted in English and Spanish by Henry Cooper of Proyecto Latino Americano and our Latino programming crew.
So tune in on Tuesday, April 11th, from 7 to 10 p.m. for a special broadcast on the federal immigration legislation being debated in Congress, the immigrants' rights movement in Houston, and more.
This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston.
I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, host and producer of Uprising. Each week on Tuesday at 2 p.m., you can tune in to KPFT to hear Uprising, a weekly digest of independent news analysis, investigation, education, artistic expression, and activism. On Uprising, you'll hear the voices of women, immigrants, people of color, students, workers, and others, and the crucial analyses of movements from Latin America to Central Asia and right here in the United States. That's Uprising every Tuesday at 2 p.m. on KPFT.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.